Breathing my breath. And welcome once again to another episode of Gil and Roscoe's most bedacious of horror podcasts.
You're sounding very upbeat.
I'm feeling very upbeat, brother. I'm feeling good. My name is Roscoe Harold Vacant, and I'm joined by my dear friend and colleague, Mr. Gil Rokitansky. Gil, how the devil are you?
I'm very good. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Absolutely. I've still got some nice presents sitting here for with your name on them.
Aww. I'm still waiting on yours arriving.
Through the post, the wonders of the internet age. Did you have a nice Christmas, my friend?
I did. I actually had a quiet Christmas compared to most. There were no kids about.
Uh-huh.
It was cool. It was strangely quiet, but then on Boxing
Day, you're in the habit of having big kind of family Christmases, right?
This was like a small family Christmas.
Ah, very cool. So was that in Irvine or was that in Glasgow?
That was down in Irvine. It was just very nice. Myself and Anne, my mother and my stepfather, and two of my aunts.
Very cool, very cool.
Because my cousins were kind of, they're now at this point where when you've got your own family, there comes a time when you have to have like Christmas at home.
No, I suppose.
So
man. I suppose
they both
absolutely.
Did the kind of Christmas at home thing for the first time this year, and then I saw them on Boxing Day, and I did some magic tricks for the kids.
You did? Wow, yeah. Fantastic. So how's your magic going? Is it getting there?
It goes really well in front of an audience of, like...
kids?
Four to 8-year-olds.
Fantastic.
It goes down really well with them.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, one of them, I didn't notice, but one of them was amazed by one of the tricks to the point where they actually were just, like, sitting there and went, wow.
The astounding Gil Rokitansky, that's great. Yeah. Very cool.
Then they said, make this disappear then, if you're magic. And it was just a rolled up bit of paper. And I just stood there, I did that thing where you go like, 1, 2, 3, and as you're like taking it behind your back after saying 2, you just throw it away.
Uh-huh.
And then they all went, oh my God, magic. kind of fucked up when they said, now bring it back.
So what kind of tricks have you learned?
I do a really good one with a dice and a couple of cups.
Uh-huh.
And okay. A couple of really crap card tricks.
Very cool. Very cool. So what are the card tricks? Are they...
Oh, because it's... I can't give away all the secrets.
All right. Okay, that's cool. I would never disrespect the magician's code.
I'm in the magic octagon. If you ask me how I did that trick... Fights on.
Very good. Very good. And did you get any nice gifts from people?
I did. I got a Samsung Galaxy Tab thing.
Oh, very nice, aren't you? The Fancy Dan.
Yep, Fancy Dan technology man.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
So that's quite cool. What about you?
Yeah, I got the complete Bob Dylan box set. So 47 discs of his Bobness, so that I can fully hone the best possible Bob Dylan impression, encompassing all the areas.
Yep.
So yeah, that's what I've been working on so
here
far.
Here comes in God, here comes in God, right now in God.
That's right. That's enough.
I did listen to that album on Christmas Eve.
It's a very good Christmas album.
I love it.
I listened to that one, and I listened to the Phil Spector one, A Christmas Gift for You, which is awesome.
You did the same last year, didn't you?
I did indeed. Yeah. And I also listened to the Polyphonic Spree one, which is pretty mince, actually. Because you would imagine, like, two great tastes that taste great together, the Polyphonic Spree and Christmas, but it's actually pretty lackluster, to be honest.
I'm not a big fan of the Polyphonic Spree.
I'm a big fan. I mean, I enjoyed them. I saw them at Connect along with Big Star.
I was at Connect that year as well.
Were you?
Yeah.
You go, well.
When the Beastie Boys headlined and were fucking incredible.
I think we discovered that it was actually the following year that I was there.
Was it?
I think we've talked about this before.
You're the
I was there the second
Kasabian.
Year. No, I was only there for on the Sunday for Big Star and Paul Phonics Spree and Regina Spektor. Yeah. So that was that. I wasn't there for the whole weekend or anything like that.
Actually, when I was there, it was also the Polyphonic Spree and Regina Spektor on the Sunday as well.
What must have been that year that I was there?
Was Bjork headlining?
I don't fucking know. It was LCD Sound System that
LCD
were on that.
Sound System were meant to be on before Bjork, but she said because LCD Sound System's more of a whole party thing, that she'd rather just go on before them so that they were closing out the night.
Ah, right. Well, there you go.
So I thought that was quite nice that even though she was headlining, she said, well, yeah, but let them go on last because, you know, that's more of a party atmosphere.
Very cool.
That's pretty cool. The Beastie Boys the night before were just fucking magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I was there 2007, so that was...
Yeah, that was the first year.
There you go. So
it was really good and it was very muddy.
There you go.
That's my review of the festival, folks.
It was incredibly muddy, and that was very annoying, to be honest. But yeah, yep, awesome.
I'd been there all weekend.
There you go, so you would be even more muddy than me.
Yep, the first musical act that I saw that weekend was Amy McDonald.
Oh, crikey.
Which made me want to self-harm and to start self-harming other people on their behalf.
There we go.
Like everybody on stage.
I'm going to see her live next week, actually.
Are you?
In KFC.
If only. Like Steve Brookstein when he did his tour of Starbucks.
Man. Poor Steve.
You're like, fuck, see,
Steve.
You won the X Factor. Now what you doing? You're standing in the corner of fucking Starbucks with a like fucking 10-watt karaoke machine.
Don't slag Steve. That's a shame.
Oh, he fucked it all up when he was like bragging about having two cars and everybody thought, guy's a dick.
I thought you were going to say two cocks, because that would be impressive.
No, he also belittled Volvos or something like that.
I thought you were going to say vulvas there.
I think it was Sharon Osbourne took him to task or something like that about, you know, like a Volvo's not a shit car. Some people would be lucky to have a Volvo. Some people look up to having a Volvo and you're...
Boom!
You're going on about Volvos being shit. Out of my sight, son!
Get
served. That's exactly what she said.
Yes, my sight, son. There we go. Very cool. Very cool. Did you get any horror-related gifts?
Actually, no.
I can't imagine if I got you a horror thing. I don't think so.
I tried getting you a horror thing, and I couldn't get it.
Oh, the shame.
I know.
I can't even mind what I got you. I just picked any old shit and then shoved it in a bag.
Well, it was from Poundland, wasn't it?
It wasn't from Poundland. I spent a small fortune.
King's ransom.
King's ransom. I think everybody knows I'm talking absolute nonsense now.
To be fair, like, some people are going to be tuning in this going, did you hear that Doctor Who one? That was fucking spectacular. You know,
and then there's this.
People have been like, that should win an award. Like, for like, what award is there that we would possibly be suitable for?
Most contrived plot, biggest plot hole, I don't know.
Sweariest cunts talking about a kid's show.
So you've already used the C word in this show?
Yeah.
My goodness.
That's right. The name of the award.
But the C word award?
Yeah, the sweariest cunts talking about a kid's show.
Okay.
It's a very niche award. I think so far it is just us. So we're a shoo-in.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm sure we could somehow muck it up, to be honest. Gil, have you managed to watch any other horror films other than the ones that are prescribed reading for this week?
I've actually been more of a Christmas vibe.
Of course, recently. Of course, I understand. And okay, so what Christmassy things have you watched?
Can't remember what it was called, but there was a really bad film on Channel 5 about a young man who was Santa Claus who had amnesia or something. He was like in an accident rescuing a woman who just happened to work at a hospital, and Then she takes him back to the hospital and he ends up in the psych ward where there's a guy that thinks he's Jack Nicholson, but he only thinks that he's Jack Nicholson from the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest era. So
right.
It was really random to be watching this film that is kind of aimed at kids, and there's a guy walking about continually reminding you of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You're just thinking it's going to get to the end where, like, Santa Claus is going, "She didn't believe me," as they're dragging him out of the bathroom with his wrists all cut up.
That sounds insane.
Then he gets a lobotomy.
Is this a kid's film?
Yeah, but none of that stuff happens, but when you've got a character pretend to be like Cuckoo's Nest Nicholson...
I know, okay, sorry.
You just do kind of start thinking, this could take an ugly turn.
There we go.
And Harvey?
You watched Harvey?
Yeah.
Which is one that you've been trying to...
I'm lobbying for it to be the worldwide Christmas film. Although, yeah, It's a Wonderful Life really is that, but I still think that it should follow Harvey. You know, I think if you spend your Christmas Eve watching James Stewart in Harvey and It's a Wonderful Life, then your Christmas is already off to a fucking cracking start. But I did read a thing online that somebody had gone to see, because one of our local cinemas, the GFT, shows It's a Wonderful Life every year.
That's correct,
yeah. And somebody posted about how good it was to go and see it in the cinema. It was just a shame about the people that were so rowdy they got kicked out. Who the fuck gets so rowdy at It's a Wonderful Life? I don't think Clarence is a fucking angel, by the way. Look at him, trampy wee guy.
That's insane.
What could somebody find so offensive in that film that would make them get rowdy?
My goodness. I know. Well, I saw an excellent holiday movie with the present Mrs. Vacant. We're watching Holiday in Handcuffs was the title of it, which unfortunately isn't as sexy as it sounds.
I was just thinking, it sounds like the two of you are off to a cracking start.
I know, but sadly not. It's as if I remember. No. Right. It's basically a Saved by the Bell, Clarissa Explains It All crossover, starring Mario Lopez and Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and they're basically, she's like a kind of 30-something person who's basically not going anywhere with her life, and she decides that she's going to kidnap a man and take him to her parents for Christmas and tell them that it's her boyfriend, and it's just it makes no sense. Like, there's so many, you've got to basically, you're suspending your disbelief so many times, it's unbelievable. There's massive plot holes, there's so many points at which the film should fall apart, but it was actually quite good fun, and it was nice to see nice to see Clarissa on the telly again, Melissa Joan Hart,
who now stars in the TV series Melissa and Joey, which is Melissa Joan Hart and Joey Lawrence.
Oh, no way!
Yeah, they're on to like the third season. I haven't brought myself to watch a single episode of it, because, you know, I think that it probably is just the two of them kind of like going about going, why are we not famous? And people going, look, it's Melissa Joan Hart bitching about not being famous anymore. Again.
Was he ever in anything with her? Or was he was in, like, Blossom, wasn't it?
He was in Blossom, yep.
But was he in something with her, or no?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right, cool.
But
yeah,
there isn't,
that's awesome.
There's not a Jenna Von Oy show. So
right, okay.
That was, she, of course, played Six in Blossom.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, she was lovely.
See... What was she lovely?
Yeah, she was.
Or was she just the one out of the two that just seemed...
That is harsh.
That you would get along with better. Like, when you compared Six to Blossom.
No, I mean, she's pretty... Big Bang Theory, she's pretty in that.
That... I'm not talking about Blossom, though. I'm talking about Six.
Uh-huh, Six speaks quickly. That's her thing.
Yeah. Anyway, I did just figure out what could have caused that person to go mental in the cinema.
What was that?
You think they stood up halfway through going, "This is not wonderful."
This is actually a bit of a downer.
Yeah. Still an hour and 20 minutes to go.
That's an outrage.
And it looks like George is going to take his own life.
Yeah. So, Gil, I think we should possibly explain why we've taken such a long hiatus again, even though we promised the dear listeners that we wouldn't.
Have we?
We kind of have, yeah. It's been about a month.
It's been like such a busy month that I haven't
even noticed.
Christmas shopping and
yeah, exactly.
And playing gigs and stuff.
Oh yeah, of course. And you, how did your gigs go? I was at one of them. That one wasn't promising, but I'm hoping the other one was better.
No, the other one was a lot of fun. It was really busy and we raised a lot of money for charity, so that's
very
good.
Good. And what charity was that you were benefiting?
Sense.
Very cool.
Which is
very good.
for deaf and blind people.
Very cool. So you were doing some hippity hop rapping on one of the songs.
Some Christmas rapping.
Absolutely. Bah humbug, that's too strong, but it's my favourite holiday, that one.
Yep, that one. Sorry, I just did a wee tiny burp there.
Was it nice?
It was. It tasted mainly of...
Oh, that's disgusting. Listen, we'll know that
pizza.
Podcast. Stop it. Okay, so yeah, so the gigs went well. So that was with the Hate 80s.
Yep, absolutely superb band.
Uh-huh,
and they were just awesome as fuck.
Very cool.
I was so happy to be allowed to go and do that. They're like people that I really, really look up to.
There you go. Very cool.
And
very
they
cool.
enjoyed it, so that's just
It was a
very
bonus. Good gig, and Eddie and the T-Bolts possibly played their last gig as well, so that was pretty cool.
They'd better not have played their last gig, because it was very enjoyable.
Am I right in thinking that you picked their name?
Possibly.
Did you have some hand in that?
I did have a small hand in that. Like,
there you go. What, like Jeremy Beadle?
Yeah.
Right.
That's a joke that's going to go right over so many people's heads, but if you look up Jeremy Beadle...
Don't bother. Listen, do we really need to?
He had a withered hand, and I was on his radio
show. No offence to anybody with a withered hand.
Or any other withered appendage.
Yeah, exactly. You were on his radio show.
Yeah, he's... He's got an encyclopedic knowledge of like the charts and stuff like that.
Is that right?
Yeah, but it wouldn't appear as impressive these days because you'd think he's just Googling that.
But yeah,
this was ages and ages ago.
Absolutely. So that's very awesome. So cool.
Yeah, he seemed like actually quite a nice guy. But when he died, it turned out he'd given millions and millions and millions to charity, but he'd never publicised any of it. He was like one of the biggest charity fundraisers in the world.
And I made the joke about having a slightly smaller hand than was normal.
But he would appreciate that because he did say that whenever he met someone for the first time, that uh-huh. would be the hand that he'd put out because he liked to see what the reaction was.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I think that still makes him a bit of a dick.
So despite giving millions to charity, just that's cool.
But then you pick all the kids out.
Yeah. Oh well.
Here's 50 million to Great Ormond Street. Now I'm going to chase the kids about with my tiny hand, just waving it.
Yeah. Ken, who else done a lot of work for charity? No, it's Christmas. We can't say his name. Right. Okay, guys. Without further ado, we're going to have a short break. And then we'll be back to discuss one of the Poundland specials that we've got on offer this week. We were originally going to do a kind of Poundland two-parter, but we did like an interview with Jason Figgis, and it turned out to be really, really good. So we did we spoke to him for nearly 3 hours.
So this is a bridging episode.
This is a bridging episode to buy Gil time to do a bit of editing on that episode. And then we can get that up and get that out there. So yeah, the two films that we're going to be talking about are Some Guy Who Kills People and Kentucky Fried Zombies, which was previously known as Diner. Get it? And that's the title. That's the actual title.
Yeah. Awful title.
It's like, I feel like I should have to apologise for that. You know what I mean? When really it's not my fault. But yeah, those are the films that we're going to be talking about. So without further ado, we'll have a short break and then we'll be back after this.
The podcast which you're about to listen to is an account of the viewing experiences which befell two Scottish men. It is all the more tragic in that they were young and enthusiastic. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to have watched as much of the mad and macabre movies they did. For them, a friendship and shared interest in horror movies became a nightmare. The events of their viewing were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre podcasts in the annals of podcast history. The Podcast Under the Stairs. The Podcast Under the Stairs can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com or on iTunes.
Okay, guys, and we are back. That's too enthusiastic, I'm sorry.
Whoa, motherfuckers! Something like that. Is that what you're after?
God damn! Guys, welcome back. We are here once again to discuss another Poundland classic. So it's been a while since we've done a Poundland spectacular.
I wouldn't quite call it a classic.
Well, it's been a while since we've done any Poundland films. The last time we ran off some gems, Chaw, Meat Grinder.
Oh yeah, fucking superb film.
To name but a few.
Do you know what, I really want to watch Meat Grinder again, but I don't think enough time has passed. I'm leaving it so that then I've forgotten some of the more kind of visceral segments of it, so that I will hopefully get all that same enjoyment back, because I really, really liked that film.
Awesome. So the film that we're going to be discussing this time is it's called Kentucky Fried Zombies. It's from 2012, or is it?
Yeah, it's from 2009.
So probably get that out of the way first. The film has been repackaged as Kentucky Fried Zombies by the foreign distributors. It was originally released in 2009.
It's a bit racist.
By the
foreign distributors.
By the non-US distributors. It was originally entitled Diner, and then the subtitle is Get It, Diner, Get It. So that's the title.
It's a fucking awful title.
It's a bad title. I said that to the... I'd actually spoken to the director on Twitter, and I'd said that I didn't care for it either. Either title, to be honest, because Kentucky Fried Zombies is even worse.
Yeah.
Because it's nowhere near it's not set in a chicken restaurant or anything like that.
There is no chicken on the menu.
So yeah, it's a bad title. But it's directed by Patrick Horvath. It stars Josh Groat as Ken. It stars Maria Olsen as Rose. Jorge Montalvo as Fred, Patrick Quinn as Rob, Liesl Kopp as Kathy, and Larry Purtle as Sheriff Duke Purdit. Brief synopsis, well, long synopsis. let's not lie. A serial killer holds a bickering couple and a small town sheriff hostage in a greasy spoon diner while fending off the starving legions of the undead during the zombie apocalypse.
That'll do.
That'll do us, yeah.
That's all.
Absolutely. Like, ba-ba-ba-ba.
If that synopsis goes on anymore, it's just wrong anyway.
Absolutely.
There really is nothing more to say about this film.
So, I mean, Gil, I originally, I, I started this film because you had posted that there was a lot that you didn't like about the film.
No, I didn't say there was a lot I didn't like. It was a lot I didn't like about a certain bit of editing.
Sure. Okay, so would you like to start off by saying about
what that bit of editing was?
No. Okay, well, I mean, how would you like to start the discussion of this one then?
With the editing, I think. No, I actually, I didn't mind the guy that played the protagonist in this. Sure. That was Joshua Groat. Uh-huh. Isn't a groat like a measurement or something? Like ancient measurement?
It possibly is.
I think it is.
Possibly is.
That was Ken.
Is it no currency?
Oh, it might be, yeah. A groat. It's
a groat, uh-huh. Anyway, so yeah, Ken is the homicidal murderer. Which is the best kind of murderer that I've
seen. Yeah. He's lackadaisical.
No, we don't want any of those around here. So Ken,
bipolar murderers.
Yep.
I'll kill you in two places.
Uh-huh.
I see, so the geography joke.
So the movie starts off with in my opinion, quite a weak sequence. I don't know. I mean, we'll start off by describing it and then say what we thought of it. I think it's probably the best way. Starts off with the waitress, who I think was Kathy, I think was her name. And she is talking to the killer. We don't get to see his face. Ken, we don't get to see his face. And she's talking to him. What were they saying? What was it about again? What was the discussion?
Oh, who cares?
I can't remember offhand.
It is one of those, like, oh, who cares?
No,
you start to get that halfway through the scene where you're like...
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the whole thing seems like it's shot almost like a kind of found footage type thing, because his voice is coming from almost behind the camera. And I mean, as a stylistic choice, why not do that? Absolutely. But the audio makes it as if that has been deliberately done to be like a found footage type thing, which that isn't what they're trying to achieve with the film, and that isn't what they're trying to achieve with the scene.
But it could have been.
I don't think it was.
I mean, like, it could have been something that he did, like, as part of his kind of ritual.
Mm-hmm.
He would have a heart-to-heart with them that he would surreptitiously film.
Sure.
And that would have worked out fine if he'd then done that with the couple later on.
Yep.
You know, and that would have made him a little bit more psychotic.
Yep.
And then it would have been nice if something from one of those videos needed to be watched again later on to, like, unlock a clue.
But, I mean, it's great. It's great that that happens in a single shot, and it's a pretty cool sequence for all it was. But that lack of the audio being equalised between the two voices, to me, just totally threw that sequence off.
Sorry, what was it threw you off?
The voice being disembodied. I take it you've just said it made my voice disembodied in the edit. Right, okay.
So so that was my main problem with the film. The rest of the film I felt was pretty well pulled together. It felt like a great above average indie, in my opinion. I know that you had a problem with some of the editing. There's a sequence, I mean, there's a recurring sequence every time he gets knocked out, or if he kind of goes into this dreamlike state. And then when he's pulled out of that, the scene just cuts to black completely without any kind of transition between the two.
And it cuts the music dead.
It cuts it very dead, and I think
If it had been better edited together, like if there had been a bit of echo,
just a wee bit
added
of echo
on, like, so that then you get this kind of, like, snapping out of something effect, as opposed to it just being cut dead. Because when you just cut it dead, then you do kind of leave the audience going, is that an artistic choice, or Is that just bad editing?
I mean, for the most part, I really enjoyed this one, and I mean, I felt a lot of the... It tried quite hard to do a lot of interesting stuff with camera angles. In terms of character development, each of the four main characters in the film are quite well developed, I would say. The young couple, the cop, Duke, and Ken, each of them have got their own motivations and they're quite well developed. Because it's in an enclosed space, I felt that worked really well.
I thought the cop on the radio was actually a bit better developed than Duke.
Yeah, that was great. That was great as well. I really liked that. I forgot about that.
He just sounds like he's so bored that he just like kind of
call and he starts around. Singing songs and making things up. That was great. It's really good fun.
Yeah. So there really is nothing to do in this area. So, Duke, tell me a story.
So I thought that was really good fun. I mean, you had been a bit annoyed by the fact that the title had changed and it had been passed off as a newer film than it actually was. I tweeted on Twitter. I sent a message to the director
behind my back,
Patrick Horvath, and I asked him basically what was the reason behind the title change, and he said that everything like that, the retitling, the terrible introduction sequence, which is totally out of kilter with the rest of the film, where the Kentucky Fried Zombies logo comes up.
Yep.
All of that was added by the foreign distributor, the non-US distributor. So the things that I personally didn't like about the film were pretty much all added by other people who were repackaging the film for a different market.
But you know what I quite like about that? Is that, do you think that it's also quite possible that the people that repackaged the film and retitled it, they're the only reason you've ever fucking heard of this film?
Now, absolutely.
And he's probably made more money from this film being repackaged in this really horrible, cheesy way and sold in Poundland by the dozen.
Yeah. But, I mean, you feel that... if you look at the original artwork, it's kind of a lot more... It's a lot more in tune with what the film's actually like. It's a kind of indie cover. It's a picture, a receipt, where I kind of see it very well, but it's like he's the killer's drawn it. There's a sequence where he's drawing on the receipt when he's trying to pretend that he's listening to the person who's giving him their order, and I think that the front of that is kind of making reference to that.
Yeah.
But both titles are fucking terrible. Diner and Kentucky Fried Zombies are both terrible titles for films. But I think this is a above average, good indie that shows promise for the director. I really kind of dug a lot of the choices that he made. I thought what was the band, Gil? You said the name of the band.
Oh, I can't remember what they're called right now, but I did just look at the picture, and it is the picture that he draws when he's pretending to take the order, and it is basically like a kind of bunny rabbit going down a hill.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. Uh-huh. Yep. But the band had an awful name.
But it was really good. It was kind of quite strong indie rock type thing. And then the first sequence and the title theme and I think the end theme was a kind of Nick Cave-ish type song. And all that was really, really good. And then the kind of dream sequences as well were really well done in terms of the soundtrack. Yeah, I've got no complaints from that side. I thought that was pretty awesome.
I thought maybe the soundtrack was a bit repetitive.
Because that kind of organ, the louting organ sound that kind of ran through a lot of things. Sure.
There was one scene where it was just basically a kind of improvised guitar thing. That's not in any real definitive timing, and it just goes on and... Just due to the pure length of the scene that it's backing, I found myself starting to become more annoyed with the repetition of that kind of randomized guitar part than I was paying attention to the scene. I think that was one kind of annoying problem for me, is that the music should always kind of fit, and that music just it did fit at the start, and maybe like for a minute it would have been fine to be like, oh, this is all dreamy, but when it's gone on for like 3 minutes, you start going, learn a new chord. Come on, one new chord.
Cool.
Throw in an ad ninth. Day something.
So, yeah. Anyway, regardless, Patrick Horvath really has actually went on to direct another couple of films. One of them is Entrance, which also stars Josh Groat from this.
That's Entrance, get it?
No, it's just Entrance. Right. And that's with Dallas Hallam. And they've also, I think they're in the middle of doing a movie called, well, a sequel to The Pact.
All right.
If you remember that one. So they're in currently in post-production for that. So I encourage you to check out Patrick Horvath's work. I thought this was, as I say, above average, really good, really enjoyable. I dug it. Gil?
I didn't... You just headbutt your mic.
Yes, I did.
But that's staying in. Don't you hate it when there's just an incongruous sound in the background?
I do. I hope there's not more of those in the future.
I don't know, I just... Maybe I wasn't in the most watching an indie horror film mood as I could have been when I watched this, but I kind of found myself wanting just the other characters to die so that then Ken would fuck off somewhere else and maybe meet some more interesting people. I think, you know, I thought like maybe like Ken's introduction as like, oh, I'm this serial killer and everything, and then basically he only really kills one other person after that has happened, which is like when he beheads Duke.
Yeah, but there's like that joke that comes in like about other people that he's killed round about the diner, like he killed the guy in the truck
and
driver
everything.
And different things like that. And I thought it was really cool because he's like, well. He's killed everybody he's come into contact with, pretty much, apart from the couple, and he's kind of using them, so otherwise he would.
Yeah, I thought it would have been nice if it had just been a film where he went from place to place killing people, and then they would turn into zombies, and then he'd just, like, fuck off. Like, go somewhere else, make some more zombies.
But, I mean, this is a small indie horror film. It's shot in 9 days. I think the value and the strength in a film like this is that it's constrained to one location. And that kind of makes it easier to produce and a bit easier to kind of keep in check and to keep things moving. And, do you know, I thought this was really good for a, you know, like a first feature or whatever.
Yeah, well, it is. And the fact that it's got such wide distribution, because the fact is it will have intentionally been placed in things like Poundland.
Sure.
You know, the packaging is of that build quality they've gone... Well, what we need to do is just get this film out there.
Sure.
So I have to kind of admire that in a wee bit.
Yeah, sure.
I just wish they hadn't gone with either fucking name.
Okay, guys. So that's currently available just now, Kentucky Fried Zombies. If you're in the UK, if you're in the US, I believe it's still under Diner, get it, Diner. Get it.
Do you get it? Oh, title, suit you, sir.
The title even annoys me saying it. I don't know how any of them can... Anyway, but...
Do you want it? Do you want it, sir?
Anyway.
Ooh, suit you. Diner. Get it, sir?
Definitely worth a look. So, okay, guys. So we'll take a short break, and then we'll be back to discuss. It's not John Dies at the End, it's the other one. Some guy who
I was going to say that you asked me earlier on if I did get any horror related Christmas presents. And I just realised that, well, yes, technically I did, because friend of the show, Johnny Monolith, bought me the book of John Dies at the End.
Oh, there we go. Very cool.
And
very cool.
this book is full of spiders. Seriously, don't touch it.
There you go.
So there we go. Thank you again to Johnny Monolith for giving me two awesome books as presents.
Awesome. Great. Well,
I put
we'll
them on my bookshelf.
Awesome.
I'm currently saving up for a third book.
You're the only person I know who's written more books than they've read. Okay, and we'll be back after this.
Take a journey with the Phantom Eric as he explores the last 100 years of horror. 100 films to be explored, each one with the related themes, actors, and directors that made the last century of horror cinema so great. Travel the world from Germany to Scandinavia, Italy to France, North America and everywhere in between, with no stone left unturned. The zombies are locked up, the vampires are asleep, and the prowlers have slain their last group of campers for the night. So take the hand of the Phantom American Lester Reaper, as this is one time travel experience you won't want to miss.
Okay, guys, and we're back. Gil, during the short commercial break there, we were discussing my renegade...
Renegade ways.
My daring shift from Netflix to Love Film. What do you think about that? Do you think I'm foolish? Or do you think I might be on the right course?
See, I don't know. I think... It's a tricky one. It really is. It's a tricky one. So tricky. You know, I mean, what do you go with? Do you go with one thing that lets you watch films in your house? Or do you go with a different thing that lets you watch films in your house?
I know, these are the questions.
This is what we should have been doing this whole time.
I know, absolutely.
We should have been, like, you signed up to Love Film, me signed up to Netflix, and the two of us try to discuss the same films.
Exactly.
And then when we can't discuss the same films, we have to find films that are slightly similar.
So you watch Mimic 3 Sentinel, and I watch Mimic.
Yeah.
And then we try and tie the two together.
You watch Gremlins, I watch Critters. You watch It, I watch Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Absolutely, you're getting it. I just spilled coffee on myself.
Well, oh,
thank goodness it was lukewarm.
Whose coffee was it?
I don't know.
I've never heard of this masculine temperature scale before. It's lukewarm, but I think you'll find the sandwich is Enrique toasted.
Okie doke. So you also mentioned just before we move on to discuss Some Guy Who Kills People, like proper podcast.
Proper podcast.
Don't worry. This is fuck all compared to the next segment. Believe me. you also mentioned that you had some big news in December. Are you pregnant? Are you pregnant?
It's not really not that big news, to be honest.
Well, you're giving it a big build up now, so you've
You are.
Right. Okay. Ba 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 ba. Skills. Big news.
Right, you've seen Mad Max 2, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know Warrior Woman from it?
Do I?
She lives in Troon now.
Does she honestly?
She seriously does.
That's insane.
Virginia Hay now lives in Troon and makes soap.
Have you went round to see her?
Not yet.
Has she got a shop that we can go and visit her?
She's got an online shop. I don't know if she has like a physical shop or anything. But...
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't want to jinx anything, but I was thinking at some point in the future we should do like a Mad Max episode.
Dude.
And
see, I think it's really good that we've got this kind of...
Who could we ask to talk about Mad Max?
I'm glad that we've got this forum to give out the addresses of famous celebrities. It's good that way.
Well, to be fair, I'm not sure that anybody in the world of celebrity stalking is going like... Well, I'm really having problems finding this address. Any idea where I could find that? And somebody's going, you want to listen to these guys? Check them out. They'll tell you.
You sound very shifty.
You
sound well rehearsed and that.
That Gerard Butler, he was spotted. Cost you a fiver to find out where.
The copy just off Great Western Road.
And I was standing just outside the Tori Amos concert the other night. You know who I saw?
Who's that?
Tori Amos. Thanks, she lives here now.
Oh dear, there we go.
You just give me a bit of money, I'll give you the addresses. You know, there's nobody that's listening to us for like fucking stalking advice. Did you just like do one of those laughs where your nose squeaks?
Yeah, I don't know, possibly.
I think you did.
That can be our side cast, our stalker cast. That's cool.
Christmas stalking.
Oh yeah, there's no song for that one. Okay, so guys, we're back to discuss Some Guy Who Kills People from 2011. Released on DVD 2012.
Released in Poundland 2013.
Yeah, I mean, so that's interesting in and of itself, but I'm sure we'll discuss that.
Yep.
Gil, you've got a list of the people and their names. Do you want to... Well, firstly, it was written by Ryan A. Levin, and it was directed by Jack Perez, and produced by John Landis.
Yeah. Or... Executive produced by John Landis.
Yeah, but not really, I don't think. I think they just kind of put the name on.
What?
Yeah, they said in like the kind of wee extras documentary, it's like John Landis is saying, oh, they asked if they could just use my name, and I says, aye, but don't expect it to do anything, because I use my name all the time and it doesn't do me any good. So John Landis is a Scotsman now, apparently. But that's
doesn't he? That's... No, doesn't he? I did that American Werewolf in London. And she since then, she tried to get money. Still difficult. You see, no American Werewolf in London. I did Animal House. Animal House, boy.
Right, okay. So, Gil, would you like to say the names of the people and the people that they play in the film?
Ooh, this is like a new task.
I know, I'm slow.
List.
I'm making myself redundant.
We need some music behind this.
It
needs to be a bit more intense. It needs to be like bum 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 bum. Kind of like that.
Okay, will you edit that in at the end?
No, you just do it. You just do it live. On you go.
Ba 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 ba.
Kevin Corrigan.
Ba 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 ba.
Barry Bostwick. Sheriff Wolf.
Ba 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 ba.
Oh, I'll do it in the Phantom Eric voice as well.
No, I don't bother.
Karen Black as Ruth Ball. Leo Fitzpatrick as Irv. Ariel Gade as Amy Wheeler. Eric Price as Ernie. Lucy Davis as Stefanie.
Stefanie?
Lou Beatty Jr. as Al Fugger. Jamie Haddad as Jeanette Wheeler. And Ahmed Best as Mayor Maxwell.
There we go. So, now we're going to
read it. Did you just come a little there?
It was really good. I was very impressed. Very impressed. You showed excellent vocal fortitude.
Vocal fortitude.
Okay, oh, that's what she said. At first glance, Ken Boyd may seem like an average comic enthusiast, living with his mother and working to make ends meet as an underpaid, underappreciated ice cream parlour attendant. But Ken has a dirty little secret. Dun dun dun! After being released from a stay in the loony bin, I'm not sure if that's a politically correct term, for severe mental trauma suffered when he was beaten and tortured by a gang of high school thugs, Ken's repressed anger suddenly reaches boiling point. And we'll say no more about that because the synopsis gets a little bit spoilery.
Yeah, so, where did you get that synopsis from?
That was from Rotten Tomatoes, which is my favourite go-to synopsis
place.
Oh,
you love the Rotten Tomatoes.
I do, up a tree.
They're your favourite band.
I know. I know. Well, apart from, like, Chip and Dale.
Oh, of course.
Oh, no, they're the band. What's the name of the band?
You think the Chipmunks?
Yeah, the Chipmunks. Yeah, the Chipmunks. Yeah, absolutely. That was where I was going.
Was that their big song?
Alvin.
Where are the Chipmunks?
Oh, that was the only song. That was a theme song.
They had
it?
Loads of songs.
Did they?
Yeah.
Did they really?
The Chipmunks had albums out in the 50s and the 60s. And
I remember when we went to Germany, there was shitloads of Smurfs albums.
That's a Chipmunk song, when we went to Germany. When we went to Germany! It goes like that. That was one from the early 40s, though, so probably shouldn't sing the rest of the lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of the continent, I got another nice gift that I got from my parents was the
Gift of Life!
Gift of Life, but apart from that, this year they got me 12 Asterix books.
Awesome!
I was a huge Asterix fan when I was a kid, so they got me a whole range of Asterix books, and they also got me the new one in Scots language, which is awesome. So it's Asterix and the Celts.
Can you just check who did the trans... Or is that one that's been translated?
It's one that's been translated. It was released both in English and in Scots. They're all translated.
Can you check who did the translation to Scots?
No, I can't.
Oh, it was just because I know the guy that translates the Asterix books into Gaelic.
Oh, wow, fantastic. So, that's very impressive.
That's a lovely old friend of mine, Peter Morgan.
That's really interesting.
Yep, he's done all the Asterix books.
Very interesting.
He's like the go-to man if you want a Gaelic translation.
And the great thing about Asterix is that every host language, they try and fit in jokes based around the language that it's translated into, which is awesome as well.
Yep. I was a really big fan of the Asterix books.
Yeah, man, me too.
And Getafix was the... Like the
chemist. That's right. Yep, absolutely. The apothecary.
Yep.
Apothecary, rather. Yeah, absolutely. It was awesome.
But yeah, I quite like that synopsis. I should maybe have done the synopsis in the Phantomeric voice, though.
Yeah, let's know it.
So first glance.
Kinda so like this that. One, yeah. So this one, as you say, as you rightly state, stars Lucy Davis from the UK Office.
Yep.
Who, as we've pointed out and spoke about on the show before, is
from Jasper Carrots, Willie.
That's correct. So yeah, and she was awesome in it. She was really good in it. Both of these guys are called Ken. Both the killers are called Ken.
Yep.
In the films, that's pretty impressive. So Gil, what do you think of this one?
I really enjoyed it as a kind of nice, slow-burning film.
Uh-huh.
I liked the pacing of it. It was... I mean, you were saying KFZ was quite indie, but it was indie in the kind of...
Low-budget sense.
Really low-budget sense of ours. This is like the...
This is indie with a capital I. It's kind of your Garden State type American indie film with a horror bent, I suppose.
Yeah.
Not to disparage this film by comparing it to that, but it's in that kind of style where it's your typical American indie movie.
Yep. What did you think of it?
Man, I thought it was great. It was a pleasure seeing Karen Black.
She was great in this.
She was brilliant
in
this.
Bitchy mother.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of... I'm trying not to spoil this one. But yeah.
Well, he discovers that he has a daughter. You know, that's not like a massive spoiler or anything. So then he's trying to build a relationship with his daughter, whilst at the same time all these people in the small town they live in are being killed.
Yeah. And I mean, he seems to have been criticised his whole life and put down his whole life.
For liking comic books.
He's a very put upon character. He's like, his boss treats him like crap. like, most of his friends are pretty horrible to him. So, like, when Lucy Davis's character comes in, it's like a kind of breath of fresh air. And then you've also got this great relationship between him and his daughter, where she just will not leave him alone, even though he kind of is trying to push her away, because he's kind of got into this... He's getting to this kind of mindset that he's...
He is the loner.
Yeah, he's a loner. He doesn't want to be around people because he'll only drag him down.
Yeah.
So she never gives up on him. Lucy Davis never gives up on him. And his friend is also there trying to keep pulling him up. I think he got him the job and the diner as well. Get it? and the diner, yeah. So yeah, I thought this was really cool. Much more a kind of slick. I imagine the budget would be a lot higher for this than for like the Kentucky Fried Zombies.
I think the budget for Kentucky Fried Zombies was all found down the back of the fridge.
Right. Okay. But they made some good stuff with it. Don't get me wrong. But that's a relatively big budget film, I would imagine, compared to KFC. Yep, and...
Does your Rotten Tomatoes not say what the budget is?
Or does it just
do it sometimes?
Sometimes. So Ken has, all the way through, Ken is drawing killings, basically, drawing these killings as they're happening. There's a spate of killings that are happening in the town where he lives, and they're around... They seem to be around the people who he is, who tormented him as a child.
Yep.
So it's more or less the basketball team that are being kind of picked off. So it kind of starts to tell that story, and he at the same time is documenting the killings by drawing these people being killed.
Yeah, it's quite a nice little flashback that they keep going back to, where it's not entirely black and white.
Uh-huh.
And stuff like that. I just thought it was a nice little bit of horribleness. It reminded me very much of the bullies at school. Minus the petrol can and stuff like that. They didn't go that fucking extreme, but...
The cruel, cruel words, Gil. cruel words.
I remember being bullied at school. I was only ever bullied by the best.
Do you know, I get bullied, and when they, you know, they used to call me all sorts of things, and I would say to them, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And, you know, from then on out, it was sticks and stones all the way. Harry Hill, 1995. this is very, very highly recommended in my opinion. It's really nicely shot. It's got a nice, it's got quite a kind of good vibe to it. It's really well shot. The characterizations are, well, the characters are very well developed. Karen Black, as we said, is fantastic in it.
It's got your boyfriend in it.
Barry Boswick's in it. And
so, Barry Boswick from...
what is it again? What is it he's from again?
The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah, of course. I couldn't remember what he was from, but yeah.
And Shock Treatment.
Oh, let's not go there.
Hey, I like Shock Treatment far better than I like Rocky Horror Show.
Oh, wow, that's surprising.
I'm such a hipster.
You're a fucking hipster. I totally agree with that lassie that said that now.
She didn't say that.
You know what you are? You're a contrarian. Well, the first part's right.
I'm not sure about the rarian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, very highly recommended. I have no idea why this is in Poundland just now, but presumably it's flopped financially. I mean, critically, it was a huge success. It was very much lauded, and there were
89% on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Very highly thought of in terms of the reviews in the mainstream media. So presumably it's just not done as well as expected. It's a great piece of work as far as I'm concerned, and very, very highly recommended.
Yep, it's definitely worth picking up a copy if you're...
Funny as hell.
Yep.
Darkly comical the way through. Man, I really dug this. I really liked it, and very highly recommended.
I really liked all the dark comic elements to it.
Yeah.
And the gore. I thought the gore was really nice. Like the scene at the drive-in movie theatre.
Yep.
You went to a drive-in movie theatre, didn't you?
I did, but I was going to just say before we move on, the drive-in sequence, they go through how that was made, and it's actually fantastic. They go through the whole thing, and the directors, not the director's commentary, but the kind of making of, there's like a 13-minute making of documentary, and it just shows you how they put together that scene. They used like fake asphalt and they made up like a whole fake sequence. Everything was practical effects, for the most part. Very kind of like they focused on practical effects, and the making of documentary that's on the disc goes into how they went about doing a lot of the effects that were happening in that. So it's really really awesome, like the hand twitching. They show you how they made that, and like they made the fake asphalt, and then it was just the whole thing looks as if it could have been like an animatronic hand or something like that. It's actually a fake, you know, fake ground in the foreground that then melds in with the rest of the shot, and just done in one shot with a guy moving his fingers. It's amazing. Really, really good.
Cool. It's also on Netflix. How do you like that lot, film boy?
So is this going to be a competition now?
I think we should. We should make it a competition.
To see if my investment has paid off.
Yep.
That's cool. Okay. But yes, I did go to a drive-in, and it was incredibly awesome. We went to see the Muppets Christmas Carol on the shores of Loch Lomond. So that was awesome.
And was it on a Saturday?
It was on a Saturday, yeah.
So it was a drive-in Saturday!
Yep, there we go. You wouldn't let it lie, would you?
Sorry.
His name was always Buddy! Sideline Twig the Wonder Kids! Right, that's enough.
We have the only reference we've ever done that is worldwide.
There we go.
There should be a large round of applause for that. See?
Right.
Told you.
Okay, guys, we're going to be taking a short break there, and then we'll be back with possibly the weakest element of the show. No, we're joined by our dear friend Thomas Hughes. So have a short break, and then we'll be back with T-Dog.
Howdy, folks. Blood, violence, freaks of nature.
You come to the right place. My name is Gary, and I'm your guide to Cinema Beef Podcast. Every episode, we not only deliver film reviews, we also dismantle some of your favorite and most hated films, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse.
Hey, you shut your face! If we want to hear you talk, I will shove my arm up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet!
All right, calm down. Every show, I hope to have a new co-host, podcasters, and listeners alike. That's right, I'm talking to you people. I take all comers.
You're slapped.
That's not very nice. The only rules, well, let's ask the best cooler in the business.
All you have to do is follow three simple rules. One, never underestimate your opponent. Expect the unexpected. Two, take it outside. Never start anything inside the bar unless it's absolutely necessary. And three, be nice.
So join the insanity and please vent your frustrations. I'm available on TalkShoe, iTunes, and Stitcher Smart Radio. And remember, here at the Cinema Beef Podcast, if you got beef, I've got the grinder.
Okay, guys, we're back. It's our dubious pleasure to be joined once again by Bodacious Horror's genuine nut, the one and only Mr. Thomas Hughes. Thomas, how the devil are you?
Now, you said you wanted me to be a Christmas elf, but I figured that Christmas elves are not really evil, uh-huh. So I'm going to be a Christmas leprechaun instead.
Great. Okay. So in keeping with the theme of the show...
A creplechaun.
Yeah, horror leprechaun.
So since you're a horror wrestling leprechaun, you could actually be Hornswoggle.
I can. Since we're filming the new version of Leprechaun at the moment.
Absolutely. So there's a wrestling horror link already since Mr. Bill Goldberg was in this.
Indeed.
Thomas
is in the wilds of Africa at the moment researching his new book.
What's that called, Gil?
It's called My Life in Deepest, Darkest Africa. I said it was his new book. I didn't say his imaginatively titled new book.
While dressed as a horror leprechaun, that's exciting.
A Christmas horror leprechaun. A creplechaun.
Christmas horror leprechaun.
So, Thomas, are you well?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Nice to be back on the show again, guys. It's lovely to hear from you again.
Well, absolutely. It's always nice to have you in the show, particularly if it means that you'll stop texting me quite so often.
Merry Christmas as well.
Merry Christmas, guys.
I haven't said Merry Christmas to very many.
Merry Christmas. It's almost Happy New Year time, isn't it?
It is. I'm in training.
You're in training?
In training for New Year?
Yeah.
You're going to be the only one at our little party that's drinking, Gil, by the looks of it. You're going to be.
It sounds like it, yeah.
I'm not really drinking. I am going to bring like a bottle of champagne. We're going to go for a walk up Arthur's Seat on that day.
Oh, wow, fantastic. That sounds nice.
My mum actually won tickets to the big party in Edinburgh, so she's going to that.
Fantastic, wow.
What music is being inflicted on her this year?
Pet Shop Boys.
See, that's pretty good.
That is pretty awesome. Anybody
I wouldn't say that you're being inflicted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd happily go and see the Pet Shop Boys for Ugmini. I was listening to them the other night. A few of the early tracks and a little bit of the It Couldn't Happen Here movie. Awesome production.
I think the small stages have some good stuff. I can't remember it off the top of my head, though. Sorry, it's gone from me. I'm just looking it up now.
I wondered what that tribal drumming in the background was.
Yeah, sorry. It's kind of, I don't know. I was thinking that maybe, what's his face? What's that wee boy with the two haircuts that you like, Thomas?
King John Inn.
No, the one that does the, what's his name? Skrillex.
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 Oh my God, Grandad.
What's that wee boy, son, with the two haircuts that you like?
I believe he does this thing called dubstep.
Oh, yeah, that was the word I was thinking of. That's the word I was trying
to... I don't know where that comes from, not being I'm one of those old people. Uh-huh. Why is it called the step into the dub? Where did that come from?
It surely doesn't sound like dub to me.
No, it doesn't sound anything like dub.
You're listening anyway. To the episode of Bodacious Horror Podcast that, of course, follows the Doctor Who-based episode, which was nothing like
Indeed.
This.
That was quite a good one.
Yeah, we have to remind people that every once in a while, if you keep listening, stuff like that will happen.
Yeah, exactly, and then we take a month off just to kind of...
We have to recuperate.
We need to fill our sacks up again. Thomas, you're not just here to annoy and to frustrate myself and Gil in our efforts to present a good horror podcast. You're also here because you suggested that we do after Christmas Christmas special. Now, we've not quite done that, but it's kind of worked out that your idea has come to fruition to some extent, because we're talking about Santa's sleigh from 2005, right? Well,
correct. 2005.
2004, it was in theatres in 2004 in a limited release, yes. Right, so without further ado, we'll start off with a brief synopsis. And what a synopsis indeed. So it was written and directed by David Steinman, and it stars Goldberg, Bill Goldberg from WCW as Santa Claus. It stars Douglas Smith as blank. Emily DeRaven as Nicholas. That's right.
Nicholas Yielsen.
Emily DeRaven as Mary. I don't know.
This is why people come here. It's for the research, boys and girls.
Emily DeRaven as Mary Mac McKenzie.
Oh, there we go. Robert Culp
as Grandpa.
Awesome. Saul Rubinek as
Mr. Green.
Great. And Dave Thomas as
Pastor Timmons.
Is there anybody else that's exciting that's worth mentioning?
Rebecca Gayhart.
Uh-huh.
As
I don't know.
She was Gwen Morgan.
Ah, there we go.
Right at the start, okay. With James Caan.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah, surprise.
With whom, sorry?
James Caan.
Oh, well, there you go,
at the head of the table, like a random cameo that's on.
An awesome cameo, absolutely. Wow, so jolly old Saint Nick goes from the nice list to the naughty list when an old wager runs up and his promise to be nice takes a back seat to the murderous impulses in this comic tale of terror from first-time director David Steinman. It turns out that the story of Santa Claus as we know it isn't quite the whole story, and instead of being a kind-hearted gift giver, Santa is actually a devilish life-taker. It was 1,000 years ago that the cherubic devil lost a bet with an angel that forced him to play nice for an entire millennium. Though he remained true to his word and spread Christmas cheer for what secretly seemed like an eternity, Santa's patience has run dry with the expiration of the wager, and when this bet runs up, the legend of kindly old Kris Kringle will never be the same again.
You're listening to a brief synopsis cast.
Listen to epic synopsis cast. So the film starts off with a kind of short dinner sequence that we think is introducing characters that are going to be of consequence to the movie, I suppose. So we're introduced to each of the members of the family are pretty much pretty bratty and frustrating. There's a
Horrible people.
Deeply horrible people. Gil?
Yeah, and Fran Drescher.
What was that, sorry?
And Fran Drescher. Okay. She was Bobby Fleckman in This Is Spinal Tap, and right. Still looks the same.
Uh-huh.
I love that woman.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was... Sorry, what else did you want?
So anyway, it's a family Christmas dinner sequence. There's a couple that are there, and one of them's obviously flirting with his wife's mother. There's bitchiness and backstabbiness happening all the way through it. The mother and father are arguing and blah, blah, blah. They say a really obnoxious prayer that kind of says that the poor should work harder and all these kind of things. And enters Santa. Bill Goldberg.
Santa Goldberg?
Santa Goldberg, indeed.
I have a connection to that phrase.
Do you?
Yeah, my grandfather was the Santa at the Goldberg's department store in Glasgow for like 20 years.
Wow, there you go. And your body type is actually more like Gilberg's.
This is a wrestling comment again. This podcast keeps coming back to wrestling time.
I'm sorry. Well, you should have picked a film with Bastard Goldberg in it. What am I supposed to do?
I don't know if he is a bastard or...
I'm sure he's a pretty nice chap.
I enjoyed him in this. I have like literally no knowledge of his wrestling career.
Well, he was a WCW, and he was like the biggest star for a long time.
And then he went to WWE.
And they buried him. The same as everybody else.
The same thing that happened to Sin Bodhi.
he wasn't with WCW.
No, but when he went to WWE.
Yeah, they kind of didn't handle him very well. But
see, I've got some wrestling knowledge.
Yeah.
You got some wrestling knowledge.
I got it from this show.
Absolutely. So they didn't want to put over their rivals' guys, basically. So Goldberg pretty much got buried. But anyway, yeah.
I think I vaguely remember the character, but I don't remember him really being used that much, so...
Yeah, that's it, absolutely. But he's pretty awesome in this. Surprisingly so, apart from when the guns come out, that was the only thing. That was pretty ridiculous.
Okay, I just had a lot of fun with this really daft film, to be honest. Uh-huh. I've watched it twice now.
Yep.
I really enjoy the stripper names.
What was it, Dixie Rex?
Dixie Rex. And Tess Tickler.
So yeah, the priest or the minister from the church, the local church, goes to this strip joint basically that's called something like
Gold Diggers.
Yeah. And that results in further chaos from Saint Nick. We should probably say about the kind of central characters in it. Does anybody want to pick up from there?
Gil, do you want to do that?
Hurry up. Time is money.
He's being coy. I don't like coy people. That's
I'm not being coy.
I don't care what sort of fish he keeps. Just let the man talk.
Okay.
Bill plays Santa. Douglas Smith, the guy, is he's like the son of this mad grandpa who is well known throughout Hell, which is where they live in a place called Hell. He's kind of sick and fed up of his mad grandpa, and he's got a lovely lady who's managed to put up with him for a while. And then Santa comes to town and starts killing everyone, and the grandpa seems to know more than what the rest of the villagers do, and how to survive the slaying, and how it goes from there. That's it.
Yep, that's pretty much it. The grandpa is a wee smarty inventor type Will Self sort of fellow, but you know, bit grumpy.
But you watch it and find out. A little bit grumpy. Standard old man from the movies, I reckon.
I like grumpy old men at Christmas.
I do too.
You know, because you just think, yeah, they've seen Christmas far too many times. They're just going to same old crap every year. It just gets more expensive.
So, I mean, were that family not Jewish, though?
Yes, they were. They were. And there seems to be a lot of jokes to do with Jewishness and Christmas, what being with Bill's own religion. He's very proud of being Jewish. So there seems to be lots of jokes about it. And they're all pretty funny, in my opinion. I was falling on the floor laughing at some of them.
Yeah, it is a very funny film.
I think there's actually one particularly famous death to do with it in the movie where a guy gets stabbed by a candlestick, but I don't know the name of it.
A menorah.
A menorah, there we go. That's culture cast. Well done, Gil.
You want to quiz me about the instruments of any other faith?
Oh, and a lady gets killed by the staff on the Christmas tree, which is actually, if you look carefully, a six-sided. Which I think is not a coincidence. They did that too.
Yep, lots of awesome killings in this film.
Oh yeah, they're all good killings. No complaints there.
It's pretty over the top. It's a crazy, fun, daft movie. It's actually quite Christmassy. There's a sequence with the little dolls that are dancing and stuff and doing like they're acting out the story. So it's kind of an animated segment that's quite traditional.
Yep.
And it's even got Santa slaps his face twice, and Goldberg used to do that as well. So I just thought that was, I don't know if that was a reference to that, but he kind of slapped his face with his left hand, then his right hand. And Goldberg used to do that, so I thought that was quite funny.
Apparently he's got really extreme Tourette's, and to slap himself in the face is the only way for him to speak.
Right.
So yeah, okay.
Oh, that's insensitive cast.
It is insensitive cast. Now, he has to do that every time he's going to say any words. And just because there was that one time where they accidentally left it in on camera.
Okay. So, I mean, what were your thoughts on this one, Thomas? Was you recommended this one?
Yeah, I would well recommend this. I was going to get a beer, but it's too late and I can't take the laptop off my knee now. I had Vasily beer. It was Christmas beer to be drunk. So I would well recommend you when you finish watching The Snowman, you got a little tear in your eye just after it. Even if you watch The Snow Dog afterwards, and you just need something to dry those tears up and a bit of a laughter. Grab some of your mulled cider or whatever alcoholic beverage, other drinks are available, and watch Santa's Play. You'll have a good laugh.
I'd agree with that.
Awesome. So, is that us? Are we finished? Or is there...
No, we'll still do a wee bit more. Goodness sake, that's like 5 minutes.
I can give an update on how I think video games horror are going, if you want.
No! Well, you've told us that you're going up the Wallace, the Wallace Monument, Arthur's Seat.
Yes, the Arthur's Seat for New Year.
Very cool. And what's your New Year's Day plans, or family, or?
I think probably relax and just take it easy, and not into work until the third. So not awesome. Really any plans.
Very good. And I forgot to ask you about you previously told me about the. Hunchback in Notre Dame playing at the Usher Hall. Did that work out well, or did you attend that?
I had a little look at some of it. It went pretty well, to tell the truth.
That was with a live orchestra, or was it an organist?
That was with the proper organist, yeah.
Oh, right, cool.
Yeah, no complaints, full house. You should come every year. We do a silent movie every year in the Usher Hall for all the Edinburgh or Scotland-based listeners. A silent movie every year, classic 1930s. Come dress and have a good time.
Awesome. Well, Thomas, thank you so much once again for joining us. It's very much appreciated, man, as always. And we hope that you have a very nice 2014 and that you can join us again at some point in the future.
Of course. All right. I will see you later on, guys.
Have a good hug, Manny.
Take care, man.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
I will be back after this.
This is Jamie from Devour the Podcast. Do you enjoy horror commentary with straightforward honesty?
Oh my God, fuck this movie. Fuck this movie so hard.
Oh my goodness. You know, halfway through this movie, I was just like, let's get this thing going.
Fuck this movie. Humor and an obvious passion for the genre.
You couldn't see me. I'll kick him in the face.
I like the cut of your jib. The ceiling, Grandma. Don't make me get out the broom. Oh, your tears are like wine. They used to call that the vapors. Cupcakes are kind of the Schindler's List of desserts. It's a pure good. I love the idea of up-and-coming horror directors taking on the found footage genre. I really, really like that idea.
And that's really the worst thing you can commit as far as filmmaking is concerned, is making a film that's just average.
Well, that doesn't really inspire any kind of discussion, whether it's, you know, to rip it apart or praise it. Then you should spend time with David and me.
And Bo.
As we discuss horror films from old classics.
Deep Red. Empire of the Ants. Lisa and the Devil. The Baby. The Toxic Avengers.
The new favorites.
Absentia. Cabin in the Woods. The Loved Ones. Shadow of Death. VHS. The Woman.
Check us out on iTunes or at devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. Devour the Podcast is a proud member of the Horrorphilia Podcasting Network.
Okay, guys, we're back to close out the show. Thank you once again for listening. Gil, it's been tremendously fun, hasn't it?
It has. I've missed you.
And I've missed Thomas Hughes. It's been nice to have him back on the show,
right?
That's
what I said, I've missed Hughes.
I've missed Hughes too. Bodacious Horror's very own genuine nerd. It's great to have him back and discussing some of the topics of the day.
He's going to be starting his own YouTube channel where he basically just discusses things.
He totally should start his own YouTube
channel. That's
why
I said that, because it's not true at the moment. But I'm hoping that he'll hear that and then go, oh, I'm going to do that.
He would be great for that.
Yeah.
Really good. And then we could go and join his show, and that'd be awesome.
Oh, we could like get him to start a show that's actually popular.
And then we could say, the circle is now complete. All right. Okay, guys, thank you very much indeed for listening.
You don't get any more awesome bits of information to impart on us.
I don't think so. I think
come on, your December must have... Because we all had to hear about all your stories from November. And come on, tell us a story from December.
I've not done anything exciting in December, I don't think. Trying to think. I watched The Raven. Did y'all see The Raven? No, I didn't watch The Raven. I watched The Black Cat. Do you know that one?
Yeah, that's Bela Lugosi.
Yeah, Bela Lugosi is a romantic lead.
Yep. Didn't really work for me.
It's a good one. It's a good one. It's and Boris Karloff in this great Bauhaus type house that he's built, and it's kind of above the torture chamber where Bela was held during some war. I think it was a Hungarian war.
I thought it was the first Cylon war.
I don't know first Cylon war. Yeah. Oh, Doctor Who? Yeah, is that...
That's not where the Cylons are from.
What's the Cylons?
The Cylons are Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, man, it's all the same to me.
Oh, you're so wrong. You're so wrong. You probably think the Cylons are in Doctor Who. You're so wrong.
You're so wrong. Yeah, did you see Time of the Doctor?
I did.
What did you think of it?
I thought the rest of my family should have just shut the fuck up.
That's an excellent review. I like that.
You know, it's on Christmas Day. You're at somebody else's house for Christmas Day. And then you've done all the dinner thing and all the presents are out the way. And you're like, fine, can you lot just fuck off now? And then Doctor Who comes on and you think, well, finally something good about this day. Bit of Doctor Who, and then can you hear all the fucking words? Can you fuck?
Yeah, and then there was the M.L. James show, which I missed as well.
That must have been topical. James,
ghostwriter.
All right, because M.R. James is a ghost now.
Yeah, sensitive Mark Gatiss. Thanks, Obamacare.
Ron Paul, 2012. But I did see the Doctor Who thing, and I did enjoy it. I liked the fact that they did address the fact that David Tennant had been the Doctor twice.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on the Doctor Who fan page, all the kids are moaning about the fact that it's an older Doctor. So that's...
Seriously, watch the thick of it, 8-year-olds. You'll love them.
And then, like, everybody's kind of making up these gifs with things to do with kidneys. Because he says, I've got new kidneys! And now, like, there's just like 1,000 gifs out there with him saying something about kidneys.
Gotta be careful talking about kids' knees when you're related to the BBC.
Somebody was saying about that GIF is actually pronounced GIF. GIF.
Yes. Yeah, that was...
Is that true?
Yeah, that was us. And then it's pronounced GIF,
And then it's actually pronounced SIF.
Pronounced SIF, yep.
Right, okay. Okay. Guys,
we don't plan these bits. These really are just memories of random conversations.
Do you know, this is kind of like...
You know, anybody that listened to the Doctor Who one and went, I suppose, like, the actors weren't amazing, but the script was okay. There was no script. There were no actors. That all happened.
The way that we have tended to go in the past has been we do a good episode, then we thin out the audience.
Yeah.
And hopefully this one will once again serve its purpose of reducing to a core band of loyal enthusiasts. Because that's basically what we want. We don't really want
your broadband.
No offense to the hangers-on and time wasters that come on for one show here and there. We want a core and loyal fan base, and one day we'll whittle our listener base down to that. So we're working on it.
We've almost got the addresses for all three of them.
I know, and we will reveal those addresses.
And nobody will notice.
Exactly. See if if a podcast drops and no, I don't know. Okay, guys, thank you very much indeed for listening. We appreciate
every
single...
Were you going to say that you would kill yourself?
No.
I was going to say, if a podcast drops,
I was going to say if a podcast...
5 megabits per hour.
I was going to say, if a podcast drops on iTunes but nobody hears it, did the podcast ever drop?
All right.
Or some shit, I don't know.
You were going dark.
No.
See if we put out a podcast and only 3 people do download it. I'm topping myself on the next one.
What? Okay. What the hell?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start a suicide pact.
Guys, thank you very much indeed for listening. We appreciate every single one of you as much as we loathe to say it.
I can simplify that by saying we appreciate both of you. Hello, Mum.
Hi, Dad.
See if the two of them ever got together.
I know.
We'd lose a listener.
Guys, thank you very much indeed for listening. And to our pod pals and to everyone else, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and all the best for 2014. We hope that you continue to listen to Gillian Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. We've got some excellent stuff coming up once again. We've got our interview with Jason Figgis that will hopefully be available sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Whenever Gil gets a chance to do that, we'll get that up.
Usually editing is a thing where you go, I'll do this, it'll take a couple hours. The idea of editing the Jason Figgis one is just like I'm looking at a mountain.
But it's an awesome interview. It's a really cool interview where we talk to Jason Figgis about...
everything. Everything.
Yeah,
you think that we go off on tangents?
So he's just released his film Children of the Darker Dawn, which is available on Blu-ray and DVD in the US. And
it's region free.
It's region free as well, so you can get it and sent to you from the US if you're interested. So that's Children of the Darker Dawn. We reviewed it previously. It was titled The Railway Children. So if you want to go back and listen to that, sorry, just Railway Children. So if you want to go back and listen to that review, please feel free because we've rated it very highly. And he also talks about his Indiegogo campaign for The Ecstasy of Isabel Mann. So that'll be coming up very soon. And we've also got a couple other interviews lined up for the new year.
He's also doing a sequel to that as well called The Ecstasy of Isle of Man, which is just bigger.
Right. Guys, thank you very much indeed once again, and we'll catch you all very soon. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye.
Fuckity bye.
Time to hell, all I will send. Ever dark and a night. Tingle bells.